Good morning. Good to see each and every one of you. We're in the still in the 21st chapter. Doug actually left off around verse 25, but I'd like to go back to verse 20 and get everything in somewhat context here before we begin with that. All right, in Acts 21, verses 20 to 26. And when they heard it, and this is talking about James and the elders, Paul had just told them about his work with the Gentiles. And so this continuation down. So when James, James and the elders, when they heard it, well, Paul's discussion about the Gentiles, they glorified the Lord, and they said to him, "You see, brother, how many myriads of Jews, or thousands that there are, who have believed, and they are all zealous for the Lord or for the law. But they have been informed about you that you teach all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought to not to circumcise their children, nor to walk according to the customs. What then? The assembly must certainly meet, for they will hear that you have come. Therefore, do what we tell you. We have four men who have taken a vow. Take them and be purified with them and pay their expenses so that they may shave their heads and that all may know that those things of which they were informed concern you are nothing, but that you keep yourself also walk orderly and keep the law. But concerning the Gentiles who believe, we have written and decided that they should observe no such things, except that they should keep themselves from things offered to idols, from blood, from things strangled, and from sexual immorality. Then Paul took the men, and the next day, having been purified with them, entered the temple to announce the expiration of the days of purification, at which time an offering should be made for each one of them. All right? Paul had taught that circumcision and keeping law were not essential for salvation. That's what he taught. And we saw that in Acts 15, verses 1 through 5. And he also, you remember, when among Jews, Paul lived as a Jew in order to win Jews to Christ. 1 Corinthians 9, 19-22. So what they're saying here, that these people have been informed this about Paul, it's not true. It's incorrect. And this Doug had told him about it. And, James and the elders come up with this and says, all right, to show them that, all right, let them see you, and we have four men that are going to have taken a vow, and you go with them, be purified with this. Now, if you look in Numbers, the sixth chapter, I believe, you see about the Nazarite vow, which is probably what they're talking about here. Now, the purification, though, is something different. It's say, like, if they come in contact with a dead body, then they have to be purified from that. And that's maybe the indication here that what has happened. I don't know. It doesn't really say. But they said that they need to be purified. And one of the examples they give there in number six is that when they come in contact with a dead body, they have to be purified. And it takes 7 days to do that. So the purpose of this action in verse 24, which he was talking about, should take away the misinformation about Paul and show that he walked orally and keep the law. Now, when we talk about the law, the Mosaic law, what does it cover? Well, it covers a lot of things, not only the spiritual, but their daily walks of life. You understand? If you go back and read it, how it covers what they are to be doing. You know, like washing the hands. This is traditions that they have, customs that they have. They start having all of these. And so this is what he's talking about here, that Paul himself, being a Jew, still has to do the customs of the Jews. And like we talked about, he says, when I'm among the Jews, where you see what we've talked about, how many times when he goes to a place, where does he go first on the Sabbath day? He goes to the synagogue because he knew the Jews are going to be there. And what a perfect place to teach the Jews about the Messiah and Christ. And so he observed these things like that. But he's not observing the spiritual law of what they're talking about here, telling the people that the Jews to forsake Moses, and that the Jews should not be circumcised, and it says, or nor walk according to their custom. This is all misinformation. And what Paul is trying to do, and what James and the elders are trying to do, is to show the people, the Jews here that are talking about this, or informing it, that this is not correct. This is not true with it. And so in verse 26, then Paul took the men, and the next day, having been purified with them, entered the temple to announce the expiration of the days of purification, which was 7 days, which we'll see in a minute, at which time an offering should be made for each one of them. And this is what James and the elders had talked about, that you go ahead and pay for all this, because they had to have offered sacrifice of this. Now, if you get in verse 27, it says, now when the 7 days were almost ended, this is the purification. It takes 7 days. Well, it hasn't been 7 days yet. The Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, Paul, crying out, men of Israel, help. This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against the people, the law, and this place. And this place is the temple. I believe it's not Jerusalem. I think he's talking about the temple. And furthermore, he also brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place. That's the reason I think he's talking about the temple here. Verse 29, for they had previously seen Paul with who? Trophimus, the Ephesian, with him in the city, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple. Okay? And all the people were disturbed, and the people ran together, seized Paul, and dragged him out of the temple, and immediately the doors were shut. All right. So, as I said, there takes 7 days for purification. It was almost completed. But the Jews from Asia were continuing their hostility to Paul, even here in Jerusalem. Now, why are the Jews from Asia here? Paul was wanting to go to Jerusalem for what? You remember? What was his hurry? He wanted to get to Jerusalem for Pentecost. All right, and so Pentecost, there are going to be Jews all over the world that's going to come in to Jerusalem. And that's why you got the Jews here from Asia. They were coming here there too to observe the Pentecost. And so they have come in, and what they have done, they've had hostilities against Paul. You've seen it a number of times. And here they're coming in, and they come in and trying out and saying, look what he has done. They say, Paul is charged not only teaching against the temple, he is charged with proceeding to pollute it by his action. And they saw him with Trophimus, and they just automatically assumed that Paul took him in. Now, and there have been some excavations there, and there were a couple of notices that they have found. It says, notices were posted in both Greek and Latin on the barricade between the court of the Gentiles and the inner courts, warning Gentiles not to enter. No foreigner may enter within the barricade which surrounds the temple and enclosed. Anyone who is caught doing so will have himself to thank for his ensuing death. Now, in the court of the Gentiles, Gentiles can go in there. It's free. That's the reason it's called the court of Gentiles. But you cannot go inside there. And that's the reason they have these notices here that if you're a Gentile, you do not enter through these doors, this barricade here. And if you do, just thank yourself because you're going to die. That's what the notice is for. The penalty is death. And that's what they're saying here. They see him, and they say that he took him inside. Did they see him? No. They saw him with him. They said they had seen him in the city. That's a big difference, being in the city and being in the temple. That they supposed that Paul had just took him into the temple. Paul didn't. Evil minds and wicked hearts possess fertile imagination and easily draw circumstantial conclusions. And that's what they did. Their hearts was not right. They were set against Paul. And if they can use anything and didn't make any difference whether it's the truth or not, they were going to use it. And that's how they got these people stirred up. They cried and laid their hands on them and says, "Men of Israel, help us. For this man, he teaches against us, against our holy place here. And he also brings Greeks into our temple, or Gentiles into our temple." They didn't have no evidence whatsoever. But to rile the people up against Paul, they're going to use anything that they can. This is what they have done. And the Jews were successful. The Jews of Asia were successful of stirring up causing a riot here against Paul. And it says in verse 30, and all the city was disturbed now. And the people, what? Ran together, seized Paul, dragged him out of the temple, and immediately the doors were shut. That's the temple doors. So you can imagine now what is happening. They physically took hold of Paul to drag him out of there with it. Any comments or anybody's got any questions? What we've said so far. All right. Now in verse 31. Now as they were seeking to kill him, that's to kill Paul, news came to the commander of the garrison that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. He immediately took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. Then the commander came near and took him and commanded him to be bound with two chains. And he asked who he was and what he had done. And some among the multitude cried out one thing and some another. So when he could not ascertain the truth because of the tumult, he commanded him to be taken into the barracks. When he reached the stairs, he had to be carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob, for the multitude of the people follow after, crying out, "Away from him." All right, here is the model of the forest fortress that we're talking about. So you would see that it wouldn't take very long. You have this tower here. This is what they observe what's going on. And they could observe what's happening down in here. And so you see it's right next to it, so you just got to fly the steps there. So when they see this commotion going on, they call down to the commander and tell him what was happening, what's going on. And so you can see that they can get there really actually pretty quickly. Now, since this is a Jewish holiday, the Romans have their garrison or their soldiers on ready or on alert for anything that happens. Because when you have a feast there, especially with all these Jews coming in or anything like that, they are prepared for a disturbance. And so that's the reason why he can call his men pretty quickly, because they're already ready with it. And you will notice also, see how this rock right here, this fortress is built on this rock. This rock is about 20 feet high, where it makes it easier for them, for their level, to come in. There won't be as many steps that way. So they build it on top of this rock here. This rock is solid. And it goes on back. And so that's where the fortress is. And it's called Antonia, that name after Mark Anthony. And that's who it is. But you can see it's right next to it. So there's no time ever that the commander thing will be there. Go back. All right. Their intention was to kill Paul. Okay. The watchman on the tower will be quick to notice and report the mob action. A commander now is one who commands 1,000 men, which means he has 10 centurions underneath him. Because he took soldiers and centurions with him. A centurion is in charge of 100 soldiers. So if he's in charge of 1,000, he's got 10 centurions underneath him. So he gets these men and come over. Now, they said that they come in, and when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating Paul immediately. Okay? And then the commander took charge in. He took Paul, and what he says, commanded him to be bound with 2 chains. Well, what the Romans normally do is, when you're talking about 2 chains, one arm is chained to a soldier on this side, this arm is chained to a soldier on this side. So that you have 2 chains. Both of his arms are chained, one to one soldier, one to the other. So he had 2 soldiers on each side of it. And he asked the people, said, well, what's going on? What's happening here? What's causing all this problem? And so they said, well, some of them say, well, it's this. And another group over here says, no, it's this. So he doesn't know what actually was happening here. And so when it's a thing, it says, you know, that they shouted out one charge against him, none with it. It was just a mass confusion. Remember how it was in Demetrius, the silversmith? It's the same principle here. They got them all riled up or anything, but they didn't know what was going on. He just got them all stirred up. And so when that happened there, nobody could explain exactly what their reason was, why they were beating Paul. So when he couldn't find out about this, he said, I'm going to take him back to the barracks. He says, and then when he starts taking him back, he finds out that the Jews followed him, and they were crying out, away with him. The Jews make an increasing violent effort to get the prisoner, and the soldiers pick up him bodily, with others defending those who carried the prisoner by forming a protective shield around him, and begin to move up the stairs into the forest. The mob still continue on after him. And they kept on yelling, away with him, away with Paul. But they couldn't give him a reason why. No correct thing. But they wanted it. That's how mob action is with it. And you can imagine you sitting there, being there, seeing what's going on, what the confusion is. So that's the reason the commander says, no, I can't, nobody's making any sense. Nobody's telling me anything. I'll take him back and we'll find out what's going on. And it's like I said, he put him on chains, two chains, took him back, but the Jews kept on coming after him. So that the soldiers had to lift him up bodily to protect him, then the other soldiers would be around those other ones that lift him up to protect him from the mob. That's what's happening. That's what a mob action is. And this is what Paul is going through. Now think about this. What if you were in that situation, how would you act? Now, as we go on, we're going to see how Paul reacts to this and the manner he was with this. And it's very unique to me that he could keep his control so well with all this people mob going on, wanting to kill him at this point. Any other comments or questions about it? Am I doing that good of a job? All right, verse 37. Then as Paul was about to be led into the barracks, he said to the commander, "May I speak to you?" He replied, "Can you speak Greek? Are you not the Egyptian who some time ago stirred up a rebellion and led the 4,000 assassins out into the wilderness?" But Paul said, "I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no mean city, and I implore you, permit me to speak to the people." Now, as I just told you about, these mob people coming out there, you know they're not rational, they don't know anything about it, but he wanted to speak to the people. So, when he had given him permission, Paul stood on the stairs and motioned with his hands to the people. And when there was a great silence, he spoke to them in the Hebrew language, saying, the commander, he had tried to size up the situation, okay? He couldn't get no information. He couldn't find what was going on. So he jumped to the conclusion, who Paul really was. Now, he says, now in verse 38, "Are you not the Egyptian?" Because when Paul asked him, he says, "May I speak to you?" He spoke in the language that the Roman commander could understand. And that's the reason he replied, "Can you speak Greek? You're speaking my language here. Can you speak it?" And he knew the Egyptians probably could not do that. So he says, "Are you not the Egyptian?" This is who he thinks he is, who some time ago stirred up a rebellion and led 4,000 assassins out into the wilderness. Here is Josephus' account of what the commander was talking about. He's supposed to be an Egyptian revolutionary who about 3 to 4 years earlier had deceived the people by claiming to be a prophet. This is the Egyptian. Josephus gives a figure of 30,000 who were the man's followers. Okay? He says, Josephus says, that he had a followers of 30,000. Where the other one was talking about here that he was led into with 4,000 assassins. What the difference may be, and I'm not for sure about, but maybe the difference isn't some of the things they're talking about. He had a number of sympathizers, and that number may be 30,000. There were a lot of Jews in this area that were not happy with Roman government. And I'm sure that he had probably a lot more sympathizers. But now those that actually believed him or were zealous for him, it was probably a much, much lower number. And these, he talked about and said, who were assembled on the Mount of Olives, having been told that when he, the Egyptian, gave the command, the walls would fall down and they would march in and defeat the Roman garrison. Just like Jericho wall fell down, the Egyptian told him, and says, as soon as I give you the command, those walls are coming down, and you can come right in. Felix sent out a body of troops. He killed 400 and wounded another 200. And the band of Jews were scattered while the Egyptian escaped. So the commander thought, well, this is the Egyptian. The Egyptian has come back. And that's what he's talking about. He had come back. And he says he led by 4,000 assassins. Well, assassin, if you look at the terminology, translation, it means dagger men. And here's one of the things that they would do, or his people that followed him, those that were really loyal to him, I would say, they would go out and they would find somebody, a Jew or something like that, that was not sympathetic towards them, or they were happy or wanted the Roman to rule, they would pull out their dagger, stab him, put the dagger back in, and then start saying, somebody has hurt this man. Somebody has killed this man. And that's the reason they were called assassins or dagger men. They would use their daggers to hurt the people that caused them some type of riot or problem in the situation. And so that's the reason he calls them the assassins that way. But Paul, let me go down this way. But Paul said, I am a Jew from Tarsus. Here's Paul's answer. He denied he was the Egyptian. He also denied he was a Gentile who had defiled the temple. They were talking about that. And he's not a Gentile. I did not defile it. I am a Jew. I am a Jew. Now, I am from Tarsus. Well, it says now, a citizen of no mean city, or another translation, no insignificant city. And this is one thing I found about Tarsus. This probably would raise Paul in the commander's expectation of him, because citizenship in Tarsus was limited to a select few inhabitants who had rank and fortune. That if you actually were a citizen of Tarsus, you were a high person, a part of loyalty, a royalty, or you had fortunes, or you had money, or you had rank with you. It was not easy to become a citizen of Tarsus. And so when he tells him, he says, look, I am a Jew from Tarsus. And he tells him, a city of no mean city, or an insignificant city. This is a city now that we're talking about that I am a citizen of. And he says, look, if you would, I would like to speak to the people. And so, you know, that probably maybe listened to the commander, listened to Paul, changed his attitude toward him. And so he gave him permission to speak. And so Paul stood on the stairwell and he was about to speak to him, which we'll get into chapter 22 here in a second. Any questions or comments upon that? Think about this now as we get into chapter 22, Paul's speech. Think about what he's charged with and how these people are reacting. They come in, they're false information about Paul. They say that he's doing against the custom and against circumcision, and also bringing a Greek into the Holy Temple. And they're about ready to cause a riot, or they're in a mob situation, and they're wanting to kill him. Now that's who he's speaking to. That's who the Jews who he's speaking to. All right. We'll go to the 22nd chapter, if I get it up. Oops. All right. Okay. Acts 22, the first five verses. He says, he starts out his speech here. He says, men, brethren, and fathers, hear my defense before you now. And when they heard that he spoke to them in the Hebrew language, they kept all the more silent. Then he said, I am indeed a Jew, born of Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in this city, which is Jerusalem, at the feet of Gamaliel, taught according to the strictness of our father's law, and was zealous towards God as you are today. I persecuted this way to the death, binding and delivering into prison both men and women, as also the high priest bear me witness and all the council of the elders, from whom I also received letters to the brethren, and went to Damascus to bring in chains even those who were those who were there to Jerusalem to be punished. Okay? How do you progress them? He says, brethren and fathers, showing his goodwill towards them. He starts off this way. His speech, this speech is his defense. And you've heard this before. This is his conversion. And that's what he's going to use as his defense. And he uses the Hebrew, because he's addressing the Jew. He's not talking to the commanders or to the Roman soldiers. He's talking to the Jews, the mob. This is who he's talking to. And he's using Hebrew. And what has happened when he used that? They kept all the more silent when they saw that he was speaking Hebrew, speaking to them. Paul spoke of his birth and training as a strict Pharisee, with courtesy adding, as you are today. He's talking about, here he says, look, I was at the feet of Gamaliel. They knew who Gamaliel was. He was a Pharisee. He was a great Jew there. He was a very conservative Jew. And so they knew about this, and he was set at his feet. And he says, according to the strictness of our father's law, and I was zealous towards God, just as you are today. He is talking and telling them about the reason some of you are here and doing this, because you're zealous for God. You're thinking about God's law, the spiritual law, and you're zealous for it. And he says, I was too. I was just like that. And he says, you know, I persecuted this way. Paul spoke of his persecuting those of this way are the Christians. And he says, you guys remember this. You know what I did. And this is what he's going to go ahead and tell. He says in verse 5, as also the high priest bears me witness, and all the council of the elders, they can attest to this. I have witnesses, okay? What I am telling you is the truth, and I can prove it. And how are you going to prove it? Your high priest, the council, the Sanhedrin, they can prove this. From whom I also received what? Letters to the brethren, where he went to Damascus. The fellow Jews, and went to Damascus to bring in chains now, even those who were there to Jerusalem to be punished. Those in Damascus I brought here back to Jerusalem to be punished, those Christians. This is what I did. And this has can be testified to. If you want to do a fact check, you check with the high priest and council and they can prove it. And we'll start with verse number 6.
Wednesday evening. Thank you.